You're now listening to La Verdad Podcast.
Microphone in the beginning of this podcast. How are you? Making changes. How are you, V-Fig?
I'm good, but I'm gonna open up all the shows now.
Let's see. If you could, maybe it's because I was downstairs.
An executive decision for the future of the Live Without podcast.
So, mi gente, you might have heard a different intro song on this one. I want to give a huge shout out to my boy Elias Sepulveda, who actually came up with the intro of the original intro, right? The little salsa intro that we have on our show. He actually arranged that and did the whole recording from scratch in the ENC studio, which we used to manage together. And now he actually manages in the city of Chicago. So this merengue track that you just heard, he actually hit me up a couple of days ago and was like, yo, like, do you want to add another track? And here we got it. We have a new intro. We're actually going to be switching between both of those. So if you got your little butts dancing during the intro of this podcast, make sure that you like and subscribe to Elias Sepulveda, and big shout out to him. And you can see it on our web, on our page, and you can see it on our Instagram. We're going to give him a shout out. So thank you, bro, for that. You liked it, Vanessa?
I thought it was awesome. I'm telling you, changes are coming.
So also, We still have the hats for sale. They're available on our website. So www.laveldadltd.com. And I kind of wanted to start out this show with a little bit of an intro of what we're going to be doing later on. So we had the opportunity to interview a good friend of mine. And he's actually the CEO of Century City Wealth Management. He, the founder of Mr. Century City, which is a media and technology company, has a book on Amazon that's been top selling. He's everything. Like, the man does not sleep. And his name is Adam Torres. And we had the opportunity to interview him. And we had some really good conversations in that little show, right?
We did. I think he gave us a lot of the things that he was talking about is very, like, it's like universal. It doesn't just apply to what he does in the financial world of things. I think it was like very, you know, like the same concept. It's not just for money. It's like for life and for family or whatever your decision is. So I just know
that after that conversation, I felt pumped. You know, there was a couple things there that I've been doing wrong. There was a couple things that I've been doing wrong, but there's also a couple things that he reaffirmed that I've been doing right in my finances. Mm-hmm. And not just that, man, like you mentioned, V-Fig. I keep saying Vanessa. V-Fig. As you were mentioning, you know, the fact that I lost my train of thought just because I was trying to make fun of your name.
Well, you were talking about like reaffirming.
Reaffirming certain things that we're doing, and not just in finances, but also giving us that advice as a brand. And if you're out there and you're trying to start your own organization or your own brand, he gives us a couple of good advice on that as well. So if you have time, you know, go ahead and check out his website. It's askadamtorres.com. He's also available in all the social media platforms under the handle of askadamtorres. And, you know, I'm not going to take up too much time. And I don't know if V-Fig wants to bring anything out to us. But if you have the time to
anything for you guys. I'm sorry.
She's like staring at the wall, man. Maybe because it's later in the evening today and she hasn't eaten yet. I already ate my arroz con habichuela and a chuleta, so I'm good. But if you could do us a favor, and if you go on the website and you want to support this podcast, first of all, we'll appreciate if you guys like, share, and subscribe to our podcast, whether you're listening to us on Audio Boom, on Stitcher, on the podcast app on your phone. We appreciate not only if you hit share and subscribe, but if you also leave a comment, you know, and give us some advice on what we're doing, or maybe you have a topic that you want to hear please go ahead and give us a comment in that situation. Also, if you tend to have a little bit of an extra dollar in your pocket and you feel like donating, I don't like to ask for money. I'd rather you guys just buy a hat or something. But if you do like what we do and you want to support some new equipment, if we want to get new events and some new equipment, feel free to go to our webpage and donate. We have it available within our www.lavel.ltd.com, as well as when you go and buy a hat, you have the opportunity to donate. So without further ado, I want to go ahead and take you guys to the Adam Torres interview with Lavel Podcast. Hey. Bueno, mi gente, we're back at it again with another episode of La Verdad Podcast, and this is your boy Christian, and I'm really getting used to that right now. We also are joined today.
Be big on the mic, just me today. Sorry, nobody.
So it's a small little. It's the duo, two. Right? So yes. It's a small little duo today. We got together on a evening to be able to get one of our good friends and listeners on the show that's going to give us a little insights on financial management and give us a story about how he got to where he's at right now. So we have actually with us the CEO of Century City Wealth Management, Adam Torres.
Hey, welcome. Thank you. And what do you mean only the two of you? Come on, you two bring it every time. Don't even try it. I hear you over there. Come on, bring the energy.
That's what I want to hear.
No, sometimes it gets a little weird because it's usually the three of us or four of us, so just two of us on an evening. I'm like, okay, let's make the most out of it. But how you been, man?
Oh man, all is well. Just busy. So busy week. I literally Monday I flew out of LA at what was it? Arrived in New York at midnight. Checked in by 2 a.m. Had a speaking engagement. Car picked me up at 5:10 p.m. Took me to JFK. Flew back. Got back home the next day, basically by midnight. Talk about a day.
No jet lag, I'm sure, and exhausted.
No, it's all good. I was working on the plane. I mean, that's what I call it, 4 or 5 hours of just time to write, time to do other things on a plane. So all is well.
You know, I follow a lot of your social media accounts, and usually to get a lot of positivity. Sometimes when we go through social media, there's always a lot of negative stuff, but I noticed that you're a busy guy, so we're definitely going to talk about how you keep healthy and how you keep going on the day-to-day basis, because man, I feel like you're working constantly.
Oh yeah, well it's doing what you love, there you go. So we'll get into it.
I forgot to mention to our listeners out there, the reason why I brought Adam to the show was because I got to purchase his book, which is actually on Amazon.com. It's called Money Matters, 21 Practical Lessons for Everyday Success. And bro, and it's not just because he's a good friend of mine, but it's definitely been one of those books that I picked up and I haven't stopped reading. And I've been like jotting down notes on it. It's all beat up right now. And I want to say, it's definitely changed a lot of my perspective on how to save money. So we want to talk a little bit about that today. But before we do that, can you give us a little bit of
your background?
Yeah.
Background. Oh my gosh. So the funniest ever is for everybody listening, Christian says, hey, is it okay if we get into your background? And I'm like, I want you to get into my background. I'm like, he's laughing at this post I had on Instagram.
You were 2 years old.
I'm in it. He was laughing at a post I had on Instagram. It was I don't know if the listeners all remember, but Beverly Hills Cop, that old Eddie Murphy movie, and it had Axel Foley and it has him. So I put my head, I basically superimposed it on Axel's on the movie poster. So it's kind of ridiculous, but it's funny because it shows kind of certain parts of my mentality. So Axel's wearing a Detroit Lions bomber, which shows that's where I'm from. And then it shows where I'm at in Beverly Hills. So I started out in Detroit, a middle class family, third generation now. My mother on that side of the family is all Mexican descent. And then my father's from Puerto Rico. So I'm a mutt, you know. So I'm a mutt. But really, talking about, you know, the positivity and the idea of, you know, understanding what you have to offer this world, I can just say, you know, I grew up in the 80s there, so I'm giving my age right there. And if you think about the 80s for Detroit, I mean, there's no way. Now it's on a rise again. But if you think about the 80s, I mean, at one point they brought in the National Guard to kind of get the crack situation in that area under control. So the city was literally overrun. So that's really the environment that I grew up in, was, you know, that same for anybody out there who's in a really rough neighborhood. I mean, when you go to a funeral, you know, multiple times a year for one of your friends, that's where I live. That's where I grew up, southwest side of Detroit.
And has that been able to shape who you are nowadays?
You know, I've kind of gone back and forth with that, and I have probably a different perspective than you might have heard in the past. But I don't really think it's not that I don't think it shaped who I am. It's that I don't think it was necessary. Certain things back. I mean, just to see certain things. Was it necessary for me to see people on the street strung out and crack for me to be successful? No. I mean, I'm just saying, no, it didn't help me at all. It was a hindrance from that standpoint. Did it allow me other experiences? You know, I go back and forth on that one. I won't say it shaped me, but it's a part of me, and it's not a part that I forget. And it's definitely something that I still, you know, hold close to me in terms of my family still in Michigan. Everybody I know pretty much that I grew up with still there.
Do you like attribute a lot of just where you wanted to go back to, you know, where you're coming from?
You know, I can attribute certain things that I really have the need and want to give back. So I can say my actions as I become more, as you know, I'm blessed and bigger opportunities come to me, and I'm not necessarily just out there fending for myself anymore. As I get those opportunities to give back, I mean, that's where it's really come, where it kind of comes full circle for me. I can't really claim that, you know, having that on a resume, or having even, you know, my alma mater, you know, it was an Ivy League, right? So now you think about my position now. So I'm in Century City. That's where my firm's at. And then I live in Beverly Hills. And, you know, a lot of my clients did business with me prior to knowing where I was from, or even what college I went to, right? If maybe they had known some of those things prior, maybe they'd have been going with somebody else who went to Harvard. I don't know. So I can't, I'm sorry, I'm not that guy that says I attribute it to it. I can say that it created a certain amount of barriers in my life. But in the same respect, my family, everybody there, I mean, I love them. There's no doubt about that.
And that's one of the things that I like, is the fact that, you know, not everyone's going to have that same of, oh, you know, the streets made me who I am. But then there's always that underlying factor of, hey, it showed me to appreciate things a little bit more. Not necessarily saying I want to have my kids go through that at all, because I have a daughter myself. I grew up in a bad area. I don't want my daughter to go through that at all. But I think I'm able to now understand a little bit more and appreciate things, the small little things in life, a little bit more.
Yeah.
But So what gave you, were you always a money man? Were you always into into investing and numbers?
I just blame it on, you know, there's more at work than myself. I mean, I still remember the moment when I understood money. Like, I still remember the moment, and I was about, 9 or 10. I just remembered it was, do you remember back in the day? I don't know about you, but I used to collect comic books, and I used to collect action figures. Did you do any of that? Yeah. So I remember.
I did action figures, and I did baseball cards.
Awesome. No.
And I didn't do any of that, but my cousin sure did. So.
So I remember, do you remember? I don't even know if the store's still around or if it's around anymore, but Kmart, do you remember that store?
Yep.
Yes.
So I remember going to Kmart and you could buy like a little action figure or whatever from a comic book for like, let's call it $5. So I still remember the action figure. It was Wolverine from X-Men. And I remember going to a comic book show and I remember seeing and asking them, you know, how much this Captain Kirk action figure cost at the time that I was looking at. Like it looked pretty nice. And there and it was so much more. It was like $100 or something ridiculous. And I couldn't believe it. I'm like, well, at Kmart, you have figures there for $5, and this is over here for $90. This guy's trying to rob me, right?
Yeah.
But then so I'd have conversations and that's when I learned the thought process of scarcity and also of demand. So supply and demand. So you know there were only so many of those. Every Kmart had there were only so many Captain Kirks, right? Because that'd been around for a long time. So every store out there had, and Kmart had a Wolverine figure, so that's why you could get it for $5. So immediately when I started, so then from that moment on, I was already hooked. I was like that, you know, just that want of I wanted that one. I couldn't get it because it was so expensive. From that moment on, I just remember like so for example, during Christmas time, I would ask for figures and things. So the same kind of stuff. Like, so I'd ask for that Wolverine or some other stuff, and I never opened them. I still have them to this day. They're locked away in Michigan. And that was.
So those are
So what I
definitely
would do
worth
is I
going
think,
now.
well, that's what I said. And my parents would be like, why would you ask for this and not play with it? And I'm like, well, you know, it's going to be worth money one day. Maybe not for me, but for my kids. And they're like, this
Wow.
little 10-year-old's weird.
Well, I think that speaks volume because in such an early age in your life, you were able to understand how to not. So a little kid, right, would have probably bought that toy and want to open it so they could play with it. But in your mind, you're like, let me keep it so that it's worth a lot more money later on. So that, I guess that discipline was in your life early
And
on, huh?
value of money and value of
Delayed gratification. I don't know where it came from, but that's the term. That's what gets us in trouble out here, and that's why we have debt in this country. Delayed gratification.
Exactly. Exactly.
Interesting.
And
Okay.
that kind of brings me into the book, right? Because I've been reading it. Like I said, I've been beating up the book and highlighting certain things. So there's a lot of stuff that I want to pick your brain on and discuss. And the first thing was that opened up my eyes was and those who are listening, you know, make sure you go to Amazon. It's one of the top selling books on Amazon right now. It's Money Matters, 21 Practical Lessons for Everyday Success by Adam Torres. But you talk about the financial script. Can you give us a little bit of a background on that?
Well, thank you. First, I appreciate it. You speaking so highly of the book, and the book really is the culmination of many years of work. So, just to fast forward from, you know, where I originally learned about money, the second thing was I started working for my first investment firm when I was 16. So I worked for Raymond James Financial. I literally went to school 2 hours a day, and then I went to work at the firm. So I started pretty young. So I didn't play sports in high school. I didn't do any of that kind of stuff. So I bring that up just to let you know that I've worked with every, I don't want to say level, but every type of client in terms of from just starting out to super wealthy. And it had a lot of it has to do with the amount of time and the different markets I've worked in. So for this particular book, the reason why it's so special to me is because, well, first of all, I wasn't writing it. I was on a speaking tour in China last year, and I was essentially teaching these executives at huge firms. It's top 10 firm in China. So let's just say a huge multi-billion dollar firm about money management and money practices. And when I was there, I met a gentleman by the name of Barry LaVallee, who he's been in that kind of circle or that world of traveling and speaking for a long time. And after us talking for a while, and I me telling him about the book I was writing, he's like, "You're writing the wrong book right now." And I'm like, "What do you mean?" And he's like, "Well, you have a wider message. You have a wider audience that you can reach. You don't want to just, I don't think that your goal is just to reach a certain demographic of wealthy people." Because he knew, I told him, you know, after, let's just say, many pints and many nights, right, of being in China, and we're the ones that speak English, right? So so it was by default that was my buddy, but he ended up being a really good guy. But he you know, he understood that I really wanted to, going back to your first question, I wanted that, it kind of came full circle to me. Like I was to the point to where I didn't want to just reach that wealthy, you know, top percent. I wanted to reach, you know, my cousin who is asking me a question about how to set up his 401k. But I mean, I love my family. I have a huge family. I mean, between second cousins, probably third or fourth cousins by now, it's probably like 300 people out there that I'm tied to in Detroit, in just the Detroit area, by the way. So, I mean, I have a huge family. So just saying, you know, time is time. And I'd love to have time to have that conversation with every single person that you know, had it. But I can't always spend an hour or two on the phone giving somebody, you know, basic advice, right?
So
it comes down to, you know, after talking to him, he's like, well, your real message and your real goal here is to reach a larger population that's maybe being missed. And so that's why this book was written in a very specific manner. So I wrote it extremely concise. I wanted it to, and then at the end of each chapter, I gave you the main 3 points. The reason I did that is because realistically, this entire book, if you just take, so there's not that many chapters, if you just take 1 point from every chapter and just combine and implement that in 10 years, 15 years, you will have a completely different legacy, destiny, family, and future than you would have had prior to it. These simple concepts that, like, I mean, and that's comes from people asking me the wrong questions often. And it's like, so then to get back to your question, I just want to give you a little bit more background on it, but to get to your question, this is what I find. Like, if I was to approach you right now, I'm like, Christian, you know, I'm a wealth advisor. I've been doing this for now going on, you know, 13 years. I've managed, you know, and worked with clients having over, you know, $400 million in assets. I've worked with over 3,000 clients. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is, and then I bring out this presentation and I start showing you, you know, these pie charts and I start doing this math and I start doing all this other stuff. I mean, no matter how much you may want to do it, I mean, and I'm not, you may or may not like, you know, the numbers or the finance side, and that's okay. That's why, you know, I exist and this industry exists of helping people with money. But the problem is that there's like, it's just like the school system. There's a disconnect. Like, even for someone to have that conversation with each other doesn't always happen. So the way these stories are written like this, I wrote them so that, you know, they're relatable to your life. So the one that you asked about is your financial script. So I'm thinking, well, when I was going back and thinking about it, I'm like, well, what do people relate to? And I'm like, movies, you know, movies. If you tell anybody on the face of the planet that's ever seen a movie, that they know that there's something that's behind it that makes that movie good or bad.
Exactly.
Same thing with your life. There's something behind your life that makes it good or bad. It's not an accident. It's not an accident. So the idea of saying, you know, okay, well, you're the director. So you are the director. You are controlling your own life, regardless of what maybe some people may think. You are in control of your own life to a certain extent, especially if you're in the United States.
Yeah.
So that being said, if you're this director and everybody, you know, you yell action and everybody's looking at you for direction. What are they supposed to do? Where are they supposed to go? Mm-hmm. And you're like winging it. So you look in your bag and you don't have that script ready. You don't actually know what you're planning for. You don't know that outcome, man. You're going to have a terrible movie. That's going to be a bomb. You're going to have people going one way, other people going the other. You're going to have cameramen in the shot. It's going to be terrible. The movie probably mm-hmm. will never even get done.
And the crazy part is that I've never thought about looking at my finances in a script per se. Like, a lot of times I will look at it, and, you know, growing up in the area that I did and not knowing much about finances, you know, you get stuck into this whole living paycheck to paycheck, or sometimes just doing investments that don't really are not valuable at all, and not knowing exactly where you're going to be at 10 years from now. So I think the way that you wrote it and the way that it's presented in the book, it brings it and it breaks it down. Understanding a better
way. It's a very easy read. Like you were saying, you want to try to reach a very broad audience, you know, the people that make, then, you know, your cousin that has no idea what he's doing or whatever. You want to be able to reach a broad range of people. So I think, like I was saying, the way that it's written, it's such an easy read that, you know, like you said, if you just read those points and apply those to your daily life, you can make such, you know, big changes, whether that's financially or just, you know, your life in general.
And that's the goal. That was the goal. Mm-hmm.
So yeah. One question I had, though, you said, okay, so you're talking about, you know, we are, believe it or not, in control of our lives, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but then there's this concept where I remember, I forget who was saying or whatever, but I've heard where, you know, when you can get to a point where you control your money and not have your money control you, then you're in a good spot. And, you know, like Christian was saying, I think sometimes we end up in this rut where it is maybe paycheck to paycheck and you're like, oh, you know, I'll wait till next check to get that, or, you know, that's not in the budget this month. So how do you, and maybe you've talked about this in the book, but like, mm-hmm. how do you, briefly explaining this, get to that point where you can say, I'm in control of my money. My money doesn't control me.
Yeah. And it all comes down to really one word, and it's habits. So it's really going to have to do with your habits. And for me, there's a chapter in there that's called Automate Your Success. And, mm-hmm. And that is the key to it. I'm not trying to claim that you're going to read any bit of knowledge or book or inspirational quote or anything that's going to cause you to really, change your life immediately. That takes time, but, mm-hmm. There's certain things that you can do immediately and know what a certain probability of the outcome will be. So for example, looking at that, if you look at automation. So if we look at automation, most people have, and I make this argument in the book, and I see it time and time again, and I'm guilty of it sometimes. And what it is we'll automatically pay bills, right? So we'll so I'm like, I just canceled my YouTube Red the other day. I'm like, why? It's not that I couldn't afford the $15 a month. It's that I never even look at it. I don't even know if I ever opened the dang thing. Yep. So, I mean, for whatever it's worth, it's just an expense you don't need. So it doesn't matter how much money you have. It's just a waste. It's the principle of it. If you're not using it, don't pay for it. So everybody automates their bill pay, right? Because it's easy. But the problem with this is that it becomes too easy to add these expenses. So it's called death by 1,000 cuts. I was going to put that in the book, but I'm like, that might be a little too, that might put some people up, but that's what it is. It's death by 1,000 little paper cuts. That's what's doing it to you. Mm-hmm. It's not usually the big stuff. It's not usually like, oh, you bought too many houses. That's usually not what's killing you, right? It's just usually not what's doing it. It's, oh, okay, I got all this money coming out constantly and I don't know where it's going. So I always hear that, you know, I don't know where my money goes, right? And that's a very mm-hmm. common theme you would hear. Well, I argue that you want to stop automatically paying your bills on anything that you possibly can. Pay them manually. I don't care if it's your mortgage. I don't care what it is. Make yourself sit down every month mm-hmm. to sit there, enter in the login ID, enter in the password, forget the password, get upset, and go have to reset the password because you got too many. Do all those things and keep doing that every month until you probably end up canceling it because you realize that if you can't remember the password, you probably don't need it. So do that. But then on the alternative side, you want to now start adding some things automatic. Now add things automatic to your lifestyle that are going to add to your asset column. So the other one was just adding to taking away money from you, right? Paying people. Mm-hmm. I'm not in a rush to pay people. And I'll tell you what, rich people aren't in a rush to pay people. That's why a lot of bills, like for businesses, have 30, 60 days to pay them, right? They're not in a rush to give their money away because they understand about cash flow and they understand about having money in a bank versus not having it. I would say that, you know, middle class, lower middle class, we're brainwashed the exact opposite. Oh, if you don't pay a bill on time, you know, that's the end of the, that's, you know, when did that become the definition of success, paying a bill on time? I don't know when that happened. It didn't happen for other socioeconomic statuses. We'll say that. And you can see that based off of people with wealth and sometimes extreme wealth declaring bankruptcy, right?
Yeah.
So it's perception. It's what we were kind of fed versus what's reality. So what you want to do is you want to actually make the automatic side your savings, I recommend, doing automatic savings into a bank account that maybe is not even at your primary bank where you do checking at. So I just literally wrote an article about that earlier today, now that I think about it, and we'll see if it comes out, but it might be coming out at Men's Health. But that being said, you want to treat that like a bill that you paid. So meaning it's gone, and don't even log into that bank account, and then you'll see money will start to accumulate. You'll also want to do automatic investing into your 401k or into some type of investment account, hopefully both, if you have it. But those two things, I would say, I don't like, no offense, but if you've been, and I don't mean this in a hard way, but if you've been negligent on your finance for 10 years, you listen to this podcast, you listening to one person, doesn't mean that you're going to, you know what I mean, change it in a day. But if you go in there and just do these, just change these couple of things, it forces the habit on you. It will force you the habit on you, and things will change automatically.
Yeah. And one of the things that you just mentioned, I was in a financial rut, I want to say about 4 years ago, and I took it upon myself to actually start paying things, sit down on whatever date and actually go in and log it in and paying. And aside from it helping my anxiety that I was every month, it actually helped me release and know exactly where my every single penny that I was receiving, where it was going. And on top of that, just fixing some of the stuff that I was overpaying. For example, I got into I was paying a little bit extra on my gas bill, and I figured it out, because I was actually paying it every single month, actually logging into the website. And one of the other things that you mentioned was the whole paying yourself first. And I never looked at that concept. I never even heard of that concept before even reading your book. And thought to me, because we sit there and we always say, oh man, like you mentioned earlier, where's all my money going to, And by looking at that way of paying yourself first, now it's like a little satisfaction of, okay, I got some cushion, and I know that let me pay myself first, and then all my other bills when the next day or whatever, and actually log in and do it. So for those that are listening, man, if you're going through anxiety and finances are something that's bothering you, that Adam just gave us of actually sitting down and paying your bills, a satisfaction that I can't really explain,
Adam, do you think it's like a cultural thing? Do you think that plays a role in the way that we handle or use our money? You see, maybe just your line of work and your own experience, just the values of being a Latino, Latina, or the values of being from wherever else that you come from, do you think that has had or has played a role in the way that people use and spend their money?
I wouldn't attribute it to culture. I would attribute it to maybe more closely like your micro community. So the community of people that you are around on a daily basis. So that old saying of, your bank account's probably very close to the top five or the five people that you hang around with most. It's true. It's true. I mean, I've seen that. It's completely true.
I would definitely agree with you with that.
Yeah.
Because I'm sorry. Go ahead. I don't want to cut you off.
No, but I was saying that's really, so it's, I don't think it's, I think we like to, at one point I would have said yes to that, by the way. So if you would have caught me earlier in my career, that would have been something that I would have agreed to. It's only because I've had the privilege of working in multiple socioeconomic, areas and seeing, Latinos do amazing in these enclaves of Latinos that are wealthy. And that, I mean, they're I don't speak Spanish. They speak Spanish. They're more, I'm just saying that they're and I've seen these, entrepreneurs that are international and that do business between here and all around the world that are Latino. And I see people in the media, and I see people I can't say it's culture. I can say it's community though. Like your micro community of whoever you're exchanging ideas with, that's what it is.
Yeah. But that's good that you said you have seen Latinos in this line of work. I think that sometimes the issue is that a lot of people don't see themselves out there in these positions, right? A lot of people don't see CEO in front of a Latino name, like, Adam Torres. Like, that's not the norm. So it's great to know that you do see that in what you're doing. But I, what I was saying, I was like, I definitely agree with the whole, like, it's your community. Cause I know just in discussions that I've had with Christian, like, you know, he's learning about these things from your book and, you know, just talking about how he came out of his financial rut years and years ago and whatnot. Cause I was always told, like, I grew up knowing, like, pay yourself first and the automating in your, into your savings accounts, so that you don't see it just automatically being done and treating it like if it were a bill. So I could definitely agree with you that, you know, the people that I grew up around, it makes a huge difference.
So talking about an emergency fund, and it's one of those things that a lot of us, may or may not be thinking of at the moment. So your book talks a little bit more about a good emergency fund. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So what happens is, and I've seen this to many times, and it's happened to me before earlier in my life. And so I can attest to it, especially when I was in college. So that being said, it's basically saying that you need to have a certain amount of your expenses put aside and just sitting in cash. So the reason is because as you start accumulating investments and as you build in your asset base, if something goes wrong, you know, and you need like liquid cash now, you don't want to have to tap into your investments. So what happens when you do that is you tapping into your investments, especially if you're invested in something like the stock market, then you really lose the effect of some of the investments and their longer term benefits, like the reinvesting of dividends. And for anybody listening that doesn't know what a dividend is, just think of it as some of your investments pay you a paycheck. And you can use that paycheck to put it back into the investment and make it potentially get bigger faster. Or you can, you know, take that paycheck out, right, and spend it. So if you take that paycheck out and spend it, then that really eliminates potentially a big part of the benefit of the investment. Whereas if you put it back into the investment, well, that's how people accumulate wealth and large amounts of wealth over long periods of time. So that's that's how people become millionaires and multimillionaires. And, you know, that's how average everyday people who, you know, go to work and work hard, not just people you see on TV, that's how they do it.
Nice. I was definitely one of those people that did not know what dividend means other than on the little like chance cards in Monopoly. So thank you for educating me on that.
I got you. I told you. I'm on it.
But I know I probably wasn't the only one. So
I'm on it. Well, I'm on it. I didn't know what it was either at one point. There you go. We all got to get somewhere.
yes, definitely. So aside from that too, I know one of the major points that I wanted to talk about today were advice to some of our listeners, right? Our listening age group goes from the age of 18 to probably 25, 26, late 20s, right? And a lot of that age group is the one that I would say, and correct me if I'm wrong, going through the biggest financial changes in their lives, right? When you first turn 18, that's probably when you're getting credit cards the first time, and you're probably big decisions as far as what loan you're going to take out to go to college. When you're in college, you're probably using loans to pay for food, for everyday expenses. And then when you graduate, when you hit the 21, 22 age, that's when you're trying to figure out how the hell you're going to pay all those loans. So maybe we could start with the 18-year-old age group that's about to get into a credit card. What do you recommend, or what advice would you tell
them? Can we go back, though? Like, because like you were saying, mate, I think sometimes everybody – like jumps on things or they make them. So Adam, what do you think are like the top three or the top five biggest mistakes you think people in this age group make?
Well, we can,
before giving them advice,
let's
talk about their mistakes.
We can definitely get into the minutiae and we can get deeper into it and I can give specifics. But before that, I think there's one piece of advice that I'd like to share that's really made, I'd say, one of the biggest changes in my life, number one. But number two, it overarches all of those age groups. And I mean, it goes all the way to people in their 60s or 70s. And it also hits the age groups of people younger. And that's really, you might be shocked when I say it, but I mean, this is the one thing that every single time I come back to in any business decision I'm making, or really any investment. And that is, you always seek mentors, and we talk about that pretty often. And we talk about the point of getting advice. But I would say that one thing that I stopped doing pretty young on, I still listen, I still digest, but make sure that whomever you're getting your advice from is somebody that you want to be like, that they've attained something that you want. Because if you don't do that, anything you do, I mean, it's gonna you have the possibility of being, I mean, let me say it this way. A lot of well-meaning people give bad advice. I mean, that's just the bottom line. So
Interesting.
I'll give you an example. I mean, I don't wanna necessarily, I'm not here to, bash anybody or anything like that, obviously, but I can just say that, certain points in my life growing up, maybe I took the advice of a mentor or a counselor at school or something else that when I look back at my life, I'm like, I was probably steered the wrong way multiple times and learned a lot of rough lessons that I didn't have to really learn because I was listening to people that really didn't know what they were talking about. Now that I have a higher vantage point, I realized that they were just giving me the best advice they had, but it wasn't necessary. And no offense to them, very well-meaning people, right? But getting back to what you're saying about like your bank accounts, right, are going to be somewhat near the people that are around you in your micro community. I really encourage people to go outside of that unless in terms of getting their advice, unless you have somebody in your micro community that you really admire and that you want to be like. But if you don't want to be like them, then you really got to keep looking. Because even, I mean, no offense. I mean, I love my family, love my parents, but they didn't know what really directions to send me in. And I really got lucky to be able to have started in a financial firm so young, so that I had access to people that were doing things that were far above what anybody around me, kind of knew or understood, let's say. So that being said, I just say before anything else, and we get into the minutia of it, because I don't want you to be distracted by it. I mean, because some things may throw you off. If you take one thing from this, it would be take advice from somebody that you want to be like. Or I've literally left firms because I'll give you one example. I was at a really big firm. And I won't say which one. If you're on my LinkedIn, you'll see I've worked for quite a few, but at one point and this story may not resonate for everybody, but this is my story. At one point I was meeting with, let's say, my boss's 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 boss. So basically he's like two steps below or one step removed from the CEO of a $4 trillion firm. So when he, so he's pretty up there, right? And that being said, so the firm has a certain culture, they have a certain way of doing things. And I remember him telling me, so I'm in a one-on-one meeting with him, and he was so excited because well, first of all, they bragged about, that they to keep expenses low, they fly coach, and he was very like he was proud and he's bragging about the fact that, whenever he comes out to this particular city I was living in, that he rents a Mustang and drives around in that, and it's exciting for him. And then I got home, right? And then I look at I always subscribe to the Rob Report magazine, and Rob Report magazine's one that for those of you listening that have never seen it, just think of it as it's kind of like a magazine that has, like, for those of you that like, really nice cars or watches or anything like that, it's that kind of magazine. So then I go back and I'm looking at all these private jets, and I'm like, I don't want to fly coach. I don't want to be this guy. Well, no, I mean, I don't want to be this guy. So right that moment, I knew that he had outlived his, no, not outlived as in he doesn't have anything else to give, but his advice for me on my career or what path I need to go on was no longer relevant because I don't want to be him, even though he's extremely successful. It was just like he was not the correct person for me. So it no longer resonated. So I actually left that position. I went to Israel first for a little bit and did a little traveling and soul searching. But then I actually left that position and I didn't have another position lined up. And I'd been there for quite some time and I was doing well. So a lot of people thought I was crazy, right? But I'm like, but I'm like, I kind of have outlived my my vision at that particular place. So getting back to what you told me earlier, Christian, you said, how do you stay so positive? How do you stay so, focused? Or how are you able to work like this? It's because as long as the vision is kind of clear of the direction I want to go, and then I know and as long as I'm striving for those mentors that are closer to where I want to be, then that's what makes it possible. Because so then when you're talking to somebody, so that guy, if I was talking to him, say, and showed him, for example, a magazine, and it had a Richard Mille watch in it that cost $500,000, he'd probably laugh and say, "What do you want that for? That's ridiculous. That's stupid, right? That means that's not my guy." Now I know some people in Century City who are like, "Oh, that's, oh yeah, those are nice. I have two." I mean, it's just different types of people. And I'm not saying, by the way, for anybody listening, that that has to be your goal. If your goal, let's bring it down a little bit further. If your goal is, for example, with your podcast, if your goal is to change the world through, through community engagement and to really reach your community, then you want to look for, and you may be doing this, so I'm not saying you're not, but you want to look for people that are in that world that you want to be like and approach them and make them your mentors, because they're the only ones that can do it for you. It's not somebody that want that has a different goal. And what I mean by do it for you is give you the correct advice you need.
Right. So would you say, Adam, then it's vital maybe to know, like you said, the vision needs to be clear. Like you need to know what does success look like for you, what does it mean to you, and how do you define it, and making sure that that's very clear to you before moving forward. Would you agree with that statement?
I like everything you said, but it but one just one caveat, you gotta understand your vision will change and it's okay. I like everything you said, but I'm just saying my vision as a 19-year-old, or let's go further back. My vision as a 16-year-old, it wasn't the same as it was when I was a 19-year-old versus a 20-year-old versus a 30-year-old. So be okay with that. Like we're all growing, we're all evolving. I like everything you said and I agree with you. And I just add to it that I just take off the end of it. The part that you said before starting or before going, I would chop that off. And I would say, instead of that part of the statement, say, and, be okay with changing, if you want to be one thing one day and you want to change in the next year or next 6 months and you want to, it's okay. Because we, I mean,
It tends to happen a lot too. I've seen a lot of people that might have a specific vision, whether it's on a finance area or not. They might have a vision of doing a podcast, right? And then they don't get enough likes on the first show that they put out, and then they test it out for 2 more weeks, and then they let it go. And I think one of the biggest things that we've been doing here at La Verdad is making sure that we stay consistent with that same vision, but also, like you mentioned, being okay with certain changes. Our goals might change a little bit, but as long as we stay consistent with it, we might reach that end goal, I want to say, right?
And it's really and if you're talking about from an organizational, so I was talking about from the standpoint of a person. So also, but from a standpoint of an organization, the word's called mission creep. So it's basically saying that when you lay out your mission statement every year, to go back and really look at it and say, okay, so this is what we set our missions about. What are we actually doing? Are we carrying that out? Or do we need to change the mission statement? Or do we need to reevaluate if we're going back to it? So let's just say, just for example, that you're looking at your show and all of a sudden, and I'm not saying this is the case, but let's just say you had some completely different content for too many shows in a row. And then you look back at the end of the year and you're like, well, we only did maybe 50% of the shows that actually were about the community and kind of helping this certain demographic. So we either change the mission to make it broader, or we have to get drill it back down and say, okay, we need to make sure the programming this year is closer to what we want to give content to our fans.
And that's so funny that you mentioned that, because we as La Verdad, we go through that, I want to say, on a weekly basis, where we always try to take it back and kind of take a look at the last couple of weeks of shows that we did. And not just shows, we do a lot of community events, or we try to do community events, and we try to look into doing more events in the area. And sometimes we sit there and we say, okay, is this exactly what aligns with our mission and whatnot? So it resonates a lot to me, because it's something that we're actually going through right now.
That's awesome. That means you're on the right track, and that means that ultimately I mean, you're doing the same thing that huge brands are doing. You're on the right track. It's awesome.
Yep. So when it comes down to now that we have, we explained a little bit more on the vision and what being okay with change. When it comes down to that 18-year-old, let's talk about that 18-year-old that's about to get a credit card, about to start their finances. Hopefully at that time they have some savings. Their parents probably did some savings, but let's just say they have nothing, right? They just got their first job. They're about to go to a university, and they get hit hard with 10 different credit card applications and five different loans. What advice do you give them?
So, first thing I would say is I can't give blanket information. So meaning some people, and I went to college with them too, you're just gonna rack up a bunch of debt because your parents can't afford to give you anything. So I'm not sitting here trying to suppose that there aren't gonna be people in that state. So if you're in that situation, then the most important thing for you is to think about, how you can earn more income at with balancing really your grades. So for example, when I was in college, I left with not too much debt. I maybe had about 20,000 when I left, so that's not too bad for a 4-year university. But I worked. So I worked on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I put in 40 hours a week. And I was working for an armored car carrier, so I was literally risking my life carrying money in and out with a bulletproof vest on and a revolver on my side. So I mean, you might not know that story about me, Christian. And then on top of that, I was social chair for a couple years, so there you go. And I'm balancing everything else and road tripping and still having a good college experience. But realistically, my grade suffered, so I graduated, in that and with a C average. So a lot of that was because I worked 40 hours a week. So if your goal is to be a doctor, that's not acceptable. You're just gonna have to take on the debt and get and be an A student, right? So it's okay. I mean, you have a, if you're 18, it's okay. You can dig yourself out of that. It's all right. I'll just throw you out, throw that out there. I mean, you have to do what you have to do. So make sure that you really think about your goals, and it's hard to do it at that age, right? But think about what your goal will be and kind of where you want to be long term. And if you have, going back to what I said before, I don't care what it is, if you have that goal of being a certain thing, if it let's just say it's that doctor, there's doctors in communities all over anywhere there's a college. Seek one out. Seek out a mentor, talk to them about what it's like, and have regular conversations with them, because that's what's going to keep you focused, and that's also what's going to save you some time of maybe you don't want to do that and you change your mind. It's okay, right? But don't ask, no offense to this, but if like for example, my mom's a social worker, love her so much. She retired after 40 years in social work, or more actually closer to 50. She just retired last year. No offense, but if I wanted to be a doctor, does it really make sense for me to be asking my mom advice on how to do that? She loves me. She loves me. No offense, but I'm not picking her. I totally love her, but I'm just getting back to that point. Like, you really got to get your information from. It'll save you so much time, headaches, money. So getting back to that 18-year-old, if you have to take on the debt, do it. If you have some type of option of not taking on debt and you can work some, I would say definitely, the main thing is this. If you're, and this is going to be a personal decision, is you're going to give up one of really three things. You're going to give up grades, you're going to give up college experience, or you're going to give up time. One of those three things. So grades, college experience, or time when you start thinking about finances. So if you're, and what I mean by that is, if you decide not to take on any debt and you don't have the money to do it, and you work a lot, then you're going to have to go to school longer to keep your grades up and maybe take less credits, or you're going to have to let, or your grades are going to suffer, one of the two, but you got to do it one way or another, right? I mean, I'm being completely just logical here. Something's gonna give. I'm not gonna say, oh, well, get a credit card that only has 9% versus 12%. I mean, that's not the real world, right? So I mean, that's not reality. So that being said, you're gonna have to give one of those three and decide which one matters most for you. Take on as le the least amount of credit card debt as you obviously can. and go towards student loans for whatever you can do that for. But alternatively, I mean, and this is also for adults, I mean, that are in this situation. So I see a lot of parallels. So I know based on you not working necessarily in finance, you don't get this, and a lot of people don't, but there's just parallels. The same decisions 18-year-old makes, 40-year-old makes. Getting back into that, if you can, you know, if you know what's going on with every single football game, you know, every single, you know, football player, you know what's going on, you know, every single sport out there, I argue you have time to work. I mean, no offense. That's one of the things I gave up, you know, like early on in life. I remember literally sitting on a park bench near my house with people that, you know, playing basketball with, you know, looking back now, they're probably 25, 30, 35, maybe as old as 40, you know, just in the park, knew everything about sports, you know? And when I look back at some of them and I, you know, I see them from here or there, and you know, even during that time, I could see the path. I'm like, you know, no offense, but I worked every Sunday 15 hours a day plus for many years and never even seen a football game on Sunday. I mean, so if you're in that situation to where, you know, you don't have money or you're not doing too well, just think of it this way. You're paying to watch that football game. And you're enjoying the benefits of it then. So enjoy it. I don't mean it to feel guilty. I just mean enjoy it.
I think a lot of times, you know, that just that discipline, you know, it takes discipline to think like that. I want to say, you know, a lot of times you might be it like you mentioned earlier in the conversation was that the people that you're around actually make you who you are, right? And in Spanish, there's a refrán that says, there's a phrase that says, dime con quién andas y te diré con quién tú eres, right? So tell me who you're with and I can tell you who you are. And if you're hanging out around with people that are telling you, you know, forget it, you know, get yourself, you know, pay X amount of money on these amounts of clothes, you deserve it, you work hard.
Hide your money underneath the bed.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, from what I'm getting in this conversation is it's better to be disciplined now so that you can enjoy it and reap those benefits later on in life, you know, because I tell Vanessa all the time that when I'm old and I can't wipe my own ass, I want to be able to have that and be in Mexico or be in Puerto Rico and enjoying a nice little you know, while I'm going through that hard time.
And to me, it's not about being, you know, like savings poor. So not enjoying life and just, you know, putting everything to the future. It's not even that. And part of me just doesn't even, I mean, I just don't even like the word discipline just because it has such a negative connotation. It's just basically saying, you know, enjoy both. I mean, enjoy both. Just have the right habit. Just create the right habit and enjoy both. That's all.
That's
You can have both. You can have both.
I'm definitely the one that's like scared to spend money because I'm like, oh, you never know. We might need it for this or, you know, because I always like, okay, so difference, right? So my dad, he'll get, you know, he bowls, right? So if he gets extra money, like he'll want to spend it because he has the mentality, like, you know, I work hard for my money. So if I get extra money, I'm gonna go to the bar tonight or whatever. I'm gonna go watch the game at Sneakers, a local bar by his house, right? Where me, I'm like, okay, I got this extra income out of nowhere. I'm gonna pretend like I didn't get it and throw it in my savings because whatever. So I think I'm in that. I forgot what how you said it, but it's like you're afraid to live because you're so busy just saving, saving, saving.
Savings poor, savings poor.
Yeah, that's me. So how what advice can you give me? Because I'm so like, I don't know, maybe it gives me anxiety.
Well, I'll tell you what it's not. It's not sustainable. So you're hurting yourself. You can't live your entire life like that. Then what'll happen is you'll probably, I don't know you, obviously this is our first time talking, but people that I've met that have that habit, they have the tendency to once in a while splurge and blow it. And it happens not necessarily in 1 year or one time, but it's like you have all this pent-up energy. And then at some point, like the dam breaks, and then it's like, oh, I'm on a spending spree or something changes in life. It could be, and it could even be emotional. So meaning like you lose a loved one and like something triggers or changes your mentality to where you have this feeling of why have I not been living my whole life? And then, and it could happen later in life. Like, you know what I mean? Like it doesn't, but it's just not sustainable. Like, cause life isn't perfect. So sure. It's more so about the habit of saying, you know, so in your dad's situation, if he was my client, I'd be like, all right, well, great. You have extra money. Well, how much extra do you normally have? Well, I get an extra, you know, I work some extra shift or something else. I get an extra $200. I'd be like, great. Save 100, spend 100, go have fun. But just yeah. Put that other 100 away.
I see.
It's awesome to hear this, you know, because a lot of times we're so used to hearing the whole, like you mentioned, you know, discipline and don't spend your money and don't
nah.
And I think you started out the conversation, you know, saying that the
delayed gratification.
Exactly. And a lot of times we've been so used to as a society and in the community that we're around, we've been so used to, you know, paying right away and living like, you know, this type of
on a schedule.
Yeah. Where we tend to forget about these luxuries in life. And then we get into this habit and then this habit leads to another habit to
yep.
eventually it doesn't work out the way you want it to. But I think it's been great conversations when it comes down to understanding just a little bit of all of the stuff that we could do with our money.
Yeah.
So Adam, so obviously your book, it's got 21 practical lessons. What would you say are like the top five for all of our listeners that are currently on Amazon right now buying their book, but they want to know right now, what would you say are like the top five lessons or five just key takeaways to, you know, for everyday success, however they define it?
Well, you obviously haven't read it yet, but when you read it, then I'm sorry, I had to. Well, no, the thing is when you read it, honestly, this was me distilling hundreds of lessons into this. There is no top five in this. Every single one of these is vital. Like I'm not just saying that. Like if you just flip through the table of contents, it's like let's play another game. Let's see what could I take out. Let's see, create an emergency fund. Nope, you need to do that. Create a financial plan. Nope, you need to do that. Pay yourself first. You need to do that. Should you overspend for a home or should you rent, or what matters most for you? Well, you probably don't want to leave that one out because a home is one of the bigger investments you're going to make. Let's see, debt. There's good debt and bad debt. What are the differences and how can you, I mean, probably need that one. Automate your success. Probably need, I can't do it. I'm sorry.
I could go. I get it. I didn't read the book.
But Christian, back me up on this one. Am I lying? You tell me, am I lying? Like, is there?
No. Every single one has definitely been one of those where it's like, oh, damn, I didn't know this. Oh, crap, I should do this.
I'm not trying to be like it's my, I just mean, there's one, let me do this to give you something extra. So the book, the one chapter that I was like, oh, I want to put in, and then I just ended up not doing it. And this theme is coming up in our conversation right now, so I'll leave that one with you. Opportunity cost, that's kind of been the theme of a lot of our conversation. So opportunity cost just simply means that the cost of doing one thing means that you necessarily can't do another with that. So if you have $1 and you buy a pack of gum with that $1, then you can't use that same exact $1 to buy a Snickers bar. Mm-hmm. That $1 is only, it's one and it's unique. So for example, when I gave you those three themes about college and for an 18-year-old, you know, that one of them has to give, it's basically saying, you know, if you decide to work 40, 50 hours a week, you know, in school, then maybe the opportunity cost of doing that is either your grades will suffer or you don't get to live the college experience as much, right? You can't necessarily have both. So I would say even a bigger theme than and why you said or I don't recall exactly how you put it, but you know how we're taught about money. One thing we're not taught about money is the concept of, you know, if you spend it on one thing, you can't on another. So if you're spending it all on things that are going to put you further in debt, you can't use those same dollars to really make sure that you're adding to the wealth side or the wealth column. So opportunity cost, and that goes outside of finances too. So you can use that in everything in your life. You go to the movies and you go to see one movie, you can't see the other, right? and not at that same moment in time. So if you start looking at just the decisions you make from a standpoint opportunity cost, so to bring it full circle, the opportunity cost of watching that football game means you're not earning money in that moment, assuming you don't have a passive way to do it at that moment in time. So that's where you're getting your reward. Everybody gets what they want. It's just that not everybody doesn't know what they want and how to get it.
Exactly. And I think that's a great way to end our conversation. I know we're getting closer to the hour here, but I'm sure this is going to bring up a lot of questions for our listeners. And Adam, and I just want to say I appreciate you coming in, especially here on a late evening here in Chicago. I know it's probably, what, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock over there. So
it's 7 o'clock and I'm about to go out.
Yeah, hopefully you get some dinner and have some fun today. But I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
The La Verdad team appreciate you coming in. Can you give us give our listeners a way for them to reach out to you?
Yeah, I would say definitely Instagram. Instagram is real big for me. So actually, you could go anywhere. Ask Adam Torres is my brand. So Ask Adam Torres anywhere. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, really, that's the way to reach me. AskAdamTorres.com. I got lucky. That one wasn't taken, and I own it everywhere. Every platform, Ask Adam Torres.
That's awesome. That's wonderful. So hopefully we could get together another time and actually dive into some of these topics or questions that some of our listeners may have. But like I said, thank you so much for joining us today and giving us a little bit of insight of who Adam Torres is.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. And to the audience, I wish you the most success.
Perfect. Mi gente, make sure that you follow, like, and subscribe on iTunes, Audioboom, or any platform that you choose to listen to our podcast at La Verdad LTD. And take care and God bless. Peace.